You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Welcome, everybody. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. And happy Monday afternoon. Go Pack Go, but not quite yesterday. Less go and more. Ouch, that was hard to watch. What a heartbreaker against the Cleveland Browns. It was an ugly game. Folks, that voice that you're hearing is my good friend and yours, frequent contributor to this fine program, Professor Emeritus Howard Schwaber of the University of Wisconsin-Madison. Welcome back to the program, Howard.
Thank you for having me.
We're going to get into some detail, Howard, this afternoon with you about where we are in this moment. After Mr. Kirk's assassination, after the memorializing, I think after the rewriting some of the history about what Charlie Kirk stood for, but most specifically in reference to a couple of breaking news items from last week and today. I'm going to describe those in a few moments, but let's take some of the day's breaking news just within the last hour or so, folks. Jimmy Kimmel is back on national TV. He will be returning to his late night slot tomorrow. We'll see how long that lasts. We'll see if these ABC affiliates owned by Nexstar and Tegna and Sinclair actually carry the Jimmy Kimmel Show. Watch this space. Incredibly fascinating moments that we're in. I have heard that there was so many people basically canceling their subscriptions to Disney Plus, Hulu, and the variety of other outlets and content providers that are all owned by the Walt Disney Company, which owns ABC as well, over the weekend, that the system started to crash. You literally couldn't get on to get rid of your membership. I effectively dumped my membership to Hulu, but apparently lots of folks pretty angry about what looked very clearly like either censorship by proxy through the government or just straight up censorship. We're gonna discuss more here today. Also today, there is now a new acting U.S. attorney for Virginia. Her name is Lindsey Halligan. She is the former personal lawyer for Donald Trump. And again, sworn in for the interim U.S. attorney for the Eastern District of Virginia. Just a point of note, she has no experience as a prosecutor. And she is replacing Eric Siebert, who just late last week resigned under pressure after he indicated that his office was unlikely to bring charges against two of Mr. Trump's perceived political enemies. That was then followed by the DM or direct message that I think was meant to be a direct message, but ended up as a public truth social post from the president to Pam Bondi over the weekend, which read this: "Pam, I have reviewed over 30 statements and posts." Footnote here. A president getting information and facts from social media posts? I don't know. Maybe not the best way to operate the U.S. government. But I'll get back to his statement. "I have reviewed over 30 statements and posts saying that essentially, same old story as last time. All talk, no action. Nothing is being done. What about Comey, Adam, Shifty, Shift, Letitia? They're all guilty as hell, but nothing is being done. Then we almost put a Democrat-supported U.S. attorney in Virginia with a really bad Republican past. A woke rhino who's never going to do his job. That's why two of the worst Democratic senators pushed him so hard. He even lied to the media and said he quit and that we had no case. No, I fired him, and there is a great case," all caps. "And many lawyers and legal pundits say so. Lindsey Halligan is a really good lawyer and likes you a lot. We can't delay any longer. It's killing our reputation and credibility." It's weird. He's telling the attorney general to prosecute people because not doing so is killing our reputation and credibility. No word from the president about, you know, actual crimes committed or, you know, preserving the rule of law or seeking justice in the courts. You know, the things that the Department of Justice is actually supposed to do as the literal embodiment of the people in our courts. He went on, this is how he closed out this Truth Social post: They impeached me twice and indicted me five times over nothing. Justice must be served now, President DJT. Now, I'm going to say that almost certainly that was meant to be a direct message because he signs all the rest of his posts, "Thank you for your attention to this matter," as if he's writing a memo to the American public at large. This one just signed by the president. So not only does this guy get his information and decide policy based on social media posts, he's apparently communicating via DMs with his cabinet secretaries, like the U.S. Attorney General. This is truly bizarre. A reporter asked Donald Trump about this push, this what looked like maybe was intended to be a private message to Pam Bondi, asked him directly, "Are you criticizing the Attorney General for not going after your political enemies?" And here's what the president had to say.
"No, I just want people to act. They have to act. And we want to act fast. You know, they were ruthless and vicious. I was impeached twice. I was indicted five times. It turned out to be a fake deal. And we have to act fast. One way or the other. One way or the other. They're guilty. They're not guilty. We have to act fast. If they're not guilty, that's fine. If they are guilty or if they should be charged, they should be charged. And we have to do it now."
Oh, dearie. Oh, dearie. That's just scary. Just within the last couple of hours, the Supreme Court on its shadow docket has basically completely gutted or indicates its willingness to gut the very idea of independent federal agencies. The Supreme Court has allowed Donald Trump to fire, basically without any cause, the sole remaining Democrat on the Federal Trade Commission. This is the latest in a long string of shadow docket victories for the Trump administration relating to firings of prior administration's appointees to commissions or boards that oversee these, quote, independent agencies. All of this dates back to a very old, nearly 100-year-old precedent from 1935. We'll talk a little bit about that. But it was that precedent that actually also involved the FTC, which said you've got to have cause to fire people. That is what Congress intended. That's what the enabling legislation said. And so, yes, Mr. President, you are constrained by that for-cause requirement if you want to remove commissioners or board members or heads of these independent agencies. The Supreme Court indicating today, again, the three liberal justices dissenting and writing on this, that, nah, he can just fire him for whatever reason he wants. Now, that case in chief on its full merits will be heard by the court, and they will write on it eventually. But not a good sign for what I'm going to call objective, independent expertise being respected in federal government, or the need for agencies to have oversight bodies that are bipartisan and apolitical, especially in these highly technical areas like the governance structure for the Federal Trade Commission. With all of that, there's more news today. We'll get to it when we get to it. But I want to bring Professor Schwaber onto the show. Welcome back, Professor Schwaber. I had originally intended to sort of focus our discussion today based on, I don't even know what to call what happened last week, Thursday, Friday, with this special board that helps make recommendations about vaccines. It's called the Advisory Committee on Immunization Practices for the Center of CDC. It was a train wreck of a meeting. I spent hours actually listening to the meetings since I have been in many government board meetings in the past and have some familiarity with what those look like when they're well run and clear and folks are getting their voices heard. This was not a paragon of a very well run government board meeting at all. We can get into a bit about that, but here's where I wanted to start, Professor Schwaber. Whether or not someone is a Republican or a Democrat or conservative or liberal, where does our government stand, our federal government stand today when it comes down to what I'm going to just generically describe as objective data analysis and objective science as the watchword and guide for good public policy decision making? Where are we on a scale of 1 to 10? Where are we if 10 is the best and 1 is the worst in terms of a government that really wants to be very careful about whether or not the policies they're enacting are going to accomplish the goals that they say they will, and having the analysis either to support that policy or to analyze whether it's achieving those desired results? How are we doing?
The problem is that to answer that the score you're asking for is falling so fast you need calculus to describe it. Let me say, look, there's so much going on. It's really hard to get one's arms around it. I mean, just the things that you mentioned in this lead, and there are so many of them. I want to suggest there are two really broad things going on, and then we can look at specifics, starting with the CDC, by all means. One is the politicization of everything.
Yes.
Everything is a partisan political question. There is no other standard. You might remember the famous line during the George W. Bush administration, right? We're no longer trapped in a reality-based paradigm. We've now fully moved outside the truth or fact-based paradigm. Mm-hmm. And it's not, we're going to tell lies, or, we dispute your facts. We just don't care. Facts simply aren't the measure against which we test proposals and policies and actions. The other thing is this all hardball all the time. Everything, every decision, no matter how small or no matter how large, will be decided on the basis of an absolutely ruthless calculation of short-term immediate partisan advantage that helps the president and his base. And that's it. Those two little equations explain everything, although the applications get pretty complicated.
The applications get complicated, and the implications are vast and perhaps generational, meaning what comes next after this sort of, regression into every, alternative facts, there's no facts, we'll just make it up. Again, we can disagree about policies or even objectives, but I think all folks of good faith want to know if a politician or a party or their platform is successful. And how do you even measure success? If government is to be accountable to voters, voters have to know to some degree if the policies are working. And if facts don't matter and good objective data analysis and good independent scientific research is irrelevant, then how would a voter pick a candidate?
No, that's exactly right. Look, conservatives and liberals disagree about policies. Each side claims their policy, if implemented, will have the following good results. Voters examine the outcome of those policies in action and the actions of the politicians doing them, hold people accountable, and have elections. Removing information ends accountability and puts us in a space where there's just manipulation, which frankly is exactly where Trump and his people want us to be.
Where there's just manipulation, and that's where Trump and his folks want us to be. We're going to dig in more. We're going to listen to some sound from those ridiculous CDC vaccine panel meetings right here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're with Howard Schwaber, Professor Emeritus of UW-Madison, and all of you. We're coming back in just a moment. Join us, 855-756.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Good back, everybody. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. I'm talking with Professor Emeritus Howard Schwaber from UW-Madison. We're talking about the role of objective data analysis, objective data collection, of independent scientific research, both within the government and the government's impact on that same sort of data analysis and scientific research outside of the four walls of government. And how important it is for all of us to have reliable analyses and scientific research, that we actually are in a world where we are talking about facts, where facts and the truth of the matter has objective value, that we want to be talking about the same things. And Professor Schwaber, I often feel, and I think this is reflected in you know, if you look at social media and beyond, even the way in which politicians talk about different things, that there is one set of information that reaches folks that may be more inclined to support Donald Trump. And there is different information, different facts that is reaching folks that don't support the president. And as a result, you've got two groups of people who simply do not have a common set of shared facts. I would ask you, you know, is there a loss of fidelity to facts and truth on one side or the other that is more prevalent? And I think looking at some of these actions by the Trump administration over the last few days, including the CDC's vaccine advisory panel, who's on it and what they decided, looking at the president's Truth Social post telling Pam Bondi to prosecute his political enemies without any reference to, you know, actual crimes being committed or legitimate investigations, those sorts of things. Fast forwarding to today's shadow docket ruling by the Supreme Court that says a president can basically undo Congress's statutorily enshrined intention to have certain federal agencies be independent and bipartisan and or more or less apolitical. You put all that together, that's being done by the Trump administration. I'm not aware of any Democratic president who's tried at this scale and in this variety of ways to really attack good independent data analysis, good independent scientific research, and the independence of federal agencies.
No, certainly not in the last century. And I would point to two other examples that I think are not necessarily more important, but they're striking. So the research arm of the Department of Justice is called the National Institute for Justice. And they do research reports on crime and law enforcement and all sorts of other stuff. They have a report that they produced just this past year assessing political terrorism in America. And they found, as every study has found, that it is far, far more prevalent on the political right than the political left. Another group who reached that conclusion, the Cato Institute, not a notoriously liberal or progressive group of people, and a few dozen others. This past week, the NIJ's report was removed from its website so that it would not be there to embarrass the narrative that says we're awash in left-wing violence. Now, two things about that. People getting different information has a lot to do with media and what media they listen to and what those media say. And that's a problem. And ever since, in particular, the internet came to be, we've been worried about siloing of information and living in different realities. What we have not seen before that I can think of in this country is an administration making a calculated attempt to cut off sources of data so that there would be no basis for countering their narrative. Trump says things all the time that are simply demonstrably absurd. You know, the crime rate in Washington, D.C. is the highest it's ever been. Preposterous. The economy is growing faster than it has. Absurd. And on and on. How about this one? I won the election by a giant landslide. It is not hard to look up those numbers. Those particular numbers, I don't think you can get rid of. But here's another one that just happened this week. The United States government will no longer produce its annual report on hunger in America. We will not have the collection of data of how many people are hungry, how much of the time. So that we can have a partisan narrative that suits the moment without any fear of contradiction. It really is. The only analogy I can think of, and we're not quite there yet, but it feels a little bit like it, is the old Soviet Union, right?
When yes.
Bourgeois science would be abolished because it was politically incorrect, notably evolution. They really disliked evolution. They thought it was contrary to communist teachings for reasons I'm not fully sure I understand. But so they got rid of it. And they stopped using it in their agronomical policies, and they actually unleashed a famine under the leadership of a guy named Lysenko. This is a well-known story, but the point is, when you divorce yourself from facts and science, and when you turn all empirical questions into political questions, that doesn't mean you escape the empirical consequences. And it's time to start being worried about what those consequences might look like in the near term.
When you divorce yourself from the empirical realities, it does not mean that you avoid the empirical consequences that follow from terrible policy that is divorced from reality. And Professor Schwaber, I love it when minds think alike on occasion. I talked about the Cato Institute's research about violence and extremism from the right. I talked about the fact that the NIJ's report was pulled last Tuesday, noted by a graduate student at a university in North Carolina who had been tracking this. He's the first one that sent up the warning flags on it, that it had been scrubbed from the government's website, from the DOJ's own webpage. By the way, I have a link to the Wayback Machine Internet archive of that report. We'll put it in the show notes just so everybody can see the actual report for themselves. And I say to everyone out there, Mark from Sussex, who's texting me on the line, and other folks that support the president, if the policies are such winners, if this is so obvious, why delete the data and information? We're going to take some of that sound from last week's CDC vaccine panel meetings as examples of exactly of what Howard and I are talking about and the threat that it poses to your family's health, safety, and welfare. All that coming up next. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Join us, 855-752-4842, 855-75-CIVIC. And if all this shop talk, all this politics was a little bit much for you, hang on until that 5 o'clock hour. It is our first day of Civic Media's Go for the Green and Gold Text to Win contest, spanning now beyond just the reaches of Wisconsin. We're in more states than just Wisco these days. We've got daily prizes. We've got a big grand prize worth more than $1,500. If you love the green and gold, you're going to want to stay tuned. All that coming up in the 5 o'clock hour. Right now, I've got my friend and yours, Professor Howard Schwaber from the University of Wisconsin, Madison. We're talking about why good data, good research, good science is not just essential for good government, but actually is also essential for having a reality-based ongoing political debate. It's very hard for us to engage in meaningful debate if we're experiencing two completely different factual environments. Have you ever had an argument with someone and they start talking about something and you have no idea what it is? You feel like you can't even find the beginning pieces of engagement? Well, we're sort of living in that moment for the right and the left. My thesis to you all fine listeners is simply this. The greatest volume of lying, destruction of independence, objectivity, good scientific method, good statistical and data analyses, that's coming from Donald Trump. And the reason why it's coming from Donald Trump and his cronies throughout the MAGA regime is because if he was honest, if his cronies were honest, if his executive branch agencies were honest and did good data analysis, objective science. Well, what we'd find is that Donald Trump can't keep a single one of his promises to the American people. That doesn't mean that his promises are actually being fulfilled. As Howard pointed out before the break, even if you ignore or distort or manipulate or lie about the empirical realities, that doesn't mean that you will escape the empirical consequences. And so for all of us, Republican, Democrats, independents, folks that don't like politics much at all, it matters when government stops its good faith efforts to get it right. And we saw one such abomination of government's core duties to protect the public health, safety, and welfare last week. The CDC's vaccine panel met. There are two things that I found absolutely shocking, and I've got a couple of sounds, and I want to play them for you, and then I want to get your reactions, Howard. Let's talk about what's going on with what Donald Trump just announced about autism and Tylenol. We'll get into all of that. But the two things I want folks to hear when I play you some of the sound from the vaccine panel last week is the first is this. As a data scientist, and Howard, as a professor, you can say this as well. You do not take anecdotes or your own personal experience and assume that that speaks for the whole. It is like rule number one of data analysis. I'd also say that correlation is not causation. But let's just start with this very simple idea that anecdotes are not the way that broad, scientifically driven public health policies should be made. They're made, changes are made slowly after reviewing mountains of evidence, largely driven by the consensus through peer-reviewed, analyzed, and replicable scientific data and studies. I want you to listen to what one of these RFK handpicked, didn't go through a vetting process, new vaccine panel appointees had, it, what they said during these meetings last week, because it was, just shocking. Let's start with cut 40 and take a listen.
The way I think about it is, let's say that someone would guarantee us that the adherence would be the same. Like, just for the sake of discussion, it seems to me quite reasonable that most of us would think that the separate vaccines are better because there is some harm or adverse events that are being caused in excess. I think some of us maybe feel more kind of comfortable that they know and they understand that it's just like a local impact of that event, and some of us are more concerned. But I suspect that if we would somehow be guaranteed that all things are equal between these two options, the adherence is the same, I think the choice would be clear. So that kind of brings to me, in my mind, the discussion to what extent we believe that two separate doses are going to have materialistic impact on adherence. And I'm not fully convinced which option, which fact. We are all concerned on reduction in adherence to vaccines, but it's not clear to me that the fact that we see a reduction suggests that the reduction would come or would be affected by the fact that we separate these two vaccines for the first dose. In fact, I actually tend to believe more that safer and less adverse events are going to increase trust and adherence. So that, given that at the very best, I don't think we have good evidence either way, I would go with the option that seems to be safer, that also gives lower quantity of the antigen to the children. I think that that's something that makes sense to me.
Okay, just a couple things there, and then I'm going to give you another example of this exact phenomena. He's talking about whether or not it will be the case that fewer children will receive their full vaccination schedule if they require more shots. Okay? I'll just say this. You don't have to be a data scientist to understand that, especially for the most at-risk children, if they need to get more shots over a longer period of time, fewer of them will get the full vaccination schedule. That's human behavior. This guy's talking about his beliefs, and it seems, and oh yes, by the way, they have data that proves exactly what I'm talking about, which he is willfully ignoring in his comments. That was, by the way, Dr. Retsef Levi. He's a PhD. He's not a doctor. He's not a data scientist. Unbelievable. By the way, they did separate these out. This is the new standard. This is for the MMRV. Here's another one. This is where they explicitly talk about their own personal experience. This is cut 41. Take a listen.
As far as practical experience is concerned, I'd like to echo comments of Dr. Mulhone. As a mother, it was often just commented as I came in with my children, it's time for their shots. And no additional description, VIS, the vaccine information statement, was given to me at times, not consistently every time, with the expectation, of course, that you read it when it's in hand, but not explained. I understand this may be a bias because I'm a physician. What could have been understood or expected that I understood this already. But I asked many of my patients and friends that are non-physician or not in the medical field, and they had a very similar experience almost across the board. And this is, of course, anecdotal.
Let's just wrap it there because she goes on. Your experience and your friend's experience is not relevant to public health policy decisions. That was Dr. Evelyn Griffin. By the way, she's an obstetrician and gynecologist, has no experience in immunology or epidemiology. Howard, I know that it's a little wordy and it's they're kind of talking around things and everybody's being super polite in these meetings. But that's insane when it comes to public policy. You don't use anecdotes to craft public health policy.
Well, so first of all, in my line of business, there's a saying the plural of anecdote is not anecdata, which is my favorite formulation of that particular point. On the other hand, I also used to practice law, and the converse is sometimes the singular of anecdote is testimony. So there are two competing models of how to get information. I do think it matters how whether we're following good practices about informing patients and parents. I think it matters if we're doing good, if our forms are readable. I mean, I think all those things matter.
Right.
But they're secondary to the core question of what is the medically effective method of vaccination. I'm not a doctor, but my understanding is that from the medical literature, there's a strong and well-established reason for the two separate doses. And you then approach the questions of behavior and packaging and informing in a way to achieve that goal. These guys are reversing that order. One way to think about it is, instead of saying, here's the product people need, let's figure out how to advertise it so they'll buy it, they're saying, let's figure out what advertisements will work and make the product that fits that advertisement. You can think of it that way. It's reverse reasoning, and it comes from that same thing we were talking about before, which is a kind of, well, it doesn't matter all that much what the product is at the end of the day anyway. And that's the part that's alarming and upsetting. An obstetrician, a doctor, a PhD, these are all people with training, but they're not trained in the particular area of, as far as I know, health public policy, which is a specialized area, any more than I am, for that matter. I would never think to try and advise them on medicine. Regardless, what jumps out at me is that the anecdotal stuff is really useful figuring out how to sell the thing. It's really useless in determining what the product ought to be. And they're putting the cart in front of the horse in that very, very fundamental way.
Yeah, it was, as a data scientist, I was shocked by what I was hearing in these meetings. As someone who worked with public health experts as the chief legal officer of Milwaukee County through the COVID-19 pandemic, I was shocked to hear what was being said. And repeatedly, this vaccine panel has what they call other interest group liaisons. So it's like the American Association of Pediatrics, the American Physicians, on and on and on, these big organizations. These particular liaisons, multiple times during the meetings on Thursday and Friday, when they eventually would be called on, pointed out more times than I care to count that they should be crafting the vaccine schedule for children based on broad-based studies, based on the consensus in scientific literature, not based on anecdotes. They talked about that all the time, what the policy should be and the communication strategy as a separate issue, exactly what your point is, Howard.
Secondary issue, separate and secondary.
And it was, you could hear the frustration in other subject matter experts' voices as they were trying to say, you should know better than to do it this way. The last point I want to make about the CDC vaccine panels last week that I found equally concerning, but for a different reason. On Thursday, if you were in the weeds on this at all, that vaccine panel actually adopted conflicting guidance. Their first vote said we have to separate the measles, mumps, rubella, and chickenpox vaccine for the purposes of basically private insurance. Now, interesting to note, these industry organizations and insurance organizations have said they're going to cover them as a joint vaccination as well. But the second vote that they took said, no, they have to be combined. We're going to keep the coverage going for low-income people for a combined vaccine. And it was evident in that discussion that people did not understand what they actually were voting for. So not only are these people not really subject matter experts, not only do they not know that anecdotes should not form broad-reaching public health policy, they were so novice that they couldn't even run the meeting so that everybody knew what they were voting for. This is what we've got under Donald Trump. We've got Howard, though, and me, Maggie Dawn, here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Keep it locked. We discuss implications next.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Not only do we have the kickoff to Civic Media's Go for the Green and Gold Text to Win multi-state contest kicking off at 5 o'clock, I've got another great expert joining me. Luke Baumgartner will be joining me. He is a research fellow from George Washington University that has been studying extremism. He's also a military veteran, and I can't imagine a better person to talk about where we are in this country. Who defines what is extremism, right? What does it mean? What happens when there's an explosion of extremism? How does it impact our society, our government, our policies, our institutions? Don't go anywhere. We've got those two things coming up at 5 o'clock for you. Right now, Professor Howard Schwaber from the University of Wisconsin-Madison. Howard, we've been talking about the Trump administration, the MAGA regime's attack on independent agencies and what I'm going to call good science, good data analysis, and frankly, good data reporting to the public, which enables transparency. And just today, we had the Trump administration, again, embracing with both arms a position on Tylenol that is frankly shocking. They are now claiming that Tylenol has a link to autism and encouraging pregnant mothers to not use Tylenol. As I understand things, based on current reporting, that recommendation coming from the CDC is based on one or two studies that were not wide-reaching and that many experts have criticized for poor data analysis and data collection methods, meaning they didn't reach statistically significant sample sizes, et cetera. But that didn't stop our president from saying this today.
Commonly known as Tylenol during pregnancy can be associated with a very increased risk of autism. So taking Tylenol is not good. All right, I'll say it. It's not good.
Wow.
All right, so if I can just jump in. This is really a perfect example of why all this stuff has real and serious consequences. Tylenol is extraordinary, or acetaminophen, is extraordinarily effective in combating fever. Fever during pregnancy is a huge health risk to hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of women every year. Fever can be caused by any number of things, but it's the fever itself that very often is the most lethal or most health impinging effect of any disease that's encountered. All right, when you tell the rest of the announcement was that the FDA will now give instructions to doctors not to give Tylenol to women who are pregnant and to warn them against using it. If the result is that a substantial number of women during pregnancy stop using the most effective, cheapest, most readily available remedy to fever, the likely consequence is an increase in pregnancy complications up to and including loss of the pregnancy and negative health consequences. That we should be incredibly cautious before we make a policy pronouncement that will cause people to stop doing something that works really, really well based on essentially a lobbying campaign. The discussion of the MMR vaccine earlier is another good example. The MMR vaccine has been incredibly successful and incredibly effective in effectively wiping out what were once lethal childhood diseases. And the idea that we would risk bringing them back on the basis of what is much more apolitical than a scientific process is not just, you know, bad for the world or aesthetically displeasing. It has extreme human costs. There are costs associated with the failure of government to be effective and rational. We should be clear. There have been lots of scientific failures in the years past. The NIH in particular is prone to a lot of criticism for being unduly conservative, for various biases, institutional biases, in the way it distributes research support. And during COVID, we did see government agencies wanting to be ahead of a panic, expressing more certainty than they actually had. There were mistakes, but the solution is not to replace research with anecdote.
Yes, the solution is not to replace research with anecdote, to not replace good, broad-based, consensus-based scientific recommendations, especially when it comes to pregnancy and childhood vaccine schedules, with one-off non-peer-reviewed studies. I mean, that's bananas for someone who's had peer-reviewed work published. That's not how it works. Just very briefly, Howard, I wanted to make these points and then wanted to ask you about what should regular people do in the face of this? Can we replace this? And that is, the long-term impacts of this erosion of expertise will lead to a mass exodus, a brain drain, if you will, out of not just federal government, but government writ large. It may even lead to a brain drain out of the United States. Research and innovation driven by universities, also research and innovation performed by the United States federal government, has been an incredible engine for our economic growth over the last 50 years. That is all at risk. But my point is, long term, I think this may take a generation or more to build back these capacities and competencies in the federal government. Howard, your thoughts on that? And what should an average Wisconsinite, an average American do in the face of these attacks?
Rebuilding is incredibly difficult. Kim Shepley, a professor at Princeton, has a wonderful line. She says, what's going on in the government research sector is like putting a blender into a fish tank. What you end up with is fish soup. You can take out the blender, but reassembling the fish is a lot harder. Mm. This will have, it will take a long time to rebuild. It'll take a long time to rebuild confidence as well. As for what people can do, this is very hard. It took most of a century for the federal government to build up the credibility that it has on data so that people would rely on it when they were in need. People are going to have to start finding other sources of data. Some states are involved in multi-state consortia to try and fill in those gaps. But truthfully, there really is no substitute. All I can say is we're all going to have to start getting a lot more expert finding good data from other places than this stuff that we've relied on so well for so long.
You have a responsibility to search out good information. Stay tuned. We'll have some of that from Luke Baumgartner, an extremism researcher from George Washington University, next right here on the Maggie Dawn Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. And the Green and Gold giveaway starts next. Don't go anywhere.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.